And so to that degree, now they're starting to, there are people starting to look at this from the standpoint of how do we use AI responsibly within this kind of counseling space.
Hey everybody, Doc Brian here, and welcome to Doc Talks. We talk about people's troubles, trials, tribulations, and hopefully triumphs in life. Today we're in LifeWord Studios broadcasting to 127 countries and over 175 languages to a potential listening audience of 2 billion people. You can find all of our content at lifeword.org. In a previous episode, I spoke about AI and therapy. And today we're bringing in, I will say, our resident expert on all things computers, director of digital strategies, is that what you said?
Yeah.
For LifeWord. And so, John, thank you so much for being here with
us
today.
I've been excited about this conversation.
Yeah. So AI is the new thing, artificial intelligence. Seems like everybody's using it. Tell us a little bit about what AI actually is.
So, I mean, in simplest terms, AI is a huge database with a very well-coded algorithm, a mathematical equation, if you want to think of it in those terms, that has been trained on the internet, the contents out there, the interactions that we have with it. So much of that has trained it to become this very agreeable engine that we find ourselves in today. Even in the state that it's in today, we're in the very, very early stages, you know, of this. And I kind of know, of course, we're going with the conversation here. And I think one of the interesting things to think about is that it's being adopted faster than any technology we've ever seen. And so AI is at this rate, at this point in time, is at adoption level faster than the internet itself, faster than mobile phones. It's going so fast that, quite honestly, those that would say they are the experts can't even keep up with the releases, the growth, the patterns, the things that we're seeing happen in that space.
Yeah. So I use the word some of our seasoned people, meaning older people.
Yes.
Some of them have said, well, we've had Google for years. Is Google not AI? And it is in some senses AI. But what is the main difference between a search engine and AI?
Yeah, that's a great one. So I will say this. Google, in the last year, made a transition. They went from what we traditionally have known as this search engine, you know, where we go and ask a question, whatever it may be, and it returns search results to us. They flipped the switch. And so they took all of that search data, all of that interactions over the years, and enabled in the last year, I say probably 9 months ago, what they call the AI mode. And so, you know, now when you go in and you do a search in Google, and you would expect, obviously, you get the top 10 search results, what you're looking for, that's all still there. But at the very top, most people now see a summary, an AI summary. And so all the things that we've known as search have become now this AI mode. Google's still Google. They're still the 800-pound gorilla in the room and driving a lot of this, a lot of competition, a lot of things happening in this space, obviously. But when they made that switch from this, what we call a traditional search engine, to an AI mode, now it's processing. It's thinking, in essence. That's probably the easiest way to say it in reality. But, I mean, it's thinking about what you're saying and reading into that, inferring things that other people have said, other searches that have happened. But it's giving you results that, you know, are basically a thought-out process, if you will.
Yeah, so I guess the dangerous thing about, and we, in the previous episode, we talked about mental health and AI. My first interaction with AI, which I, you know, you have to diversify your social media, which you probably know more about that than I do. and so there's a big part of my platform that's on Snapchat.
Yep.
And Snapchat has its own AI, and you name that AI person.
Yes.
And you chat with them as if they were a normal person.
Yes.
And that is really the way that AI is set up, is that you are having a conversation with a computer that has access to anything that's ever been published. And so people get this idea over a period of time that they're actually talking to a real person who has their best interest in mind.
Yes.
What is the danger there?
Well, so let me flip that back. Mm-hmm. So as a counselor, if you were in a session, multiple sessions, let's say, with a person, and all you did was agree, but you never pushed back, you never resisted, you never put them at a place where, you know, I heard it said one time that adults won't change until the pain gets great enough, you know. So if you as a counselor never put them in a place of pain to have to deal with what that issue is, what would happen in that situation?
I'd be out of a job.
Right. So yeah. So part of what you do, your responsibility is to push back and push into, you know, that issue. That doesn't happen on AI. And so to that degree, you get agreement, agreement, agreement. Well, you know, if I'm affirmed enough, sooner or later, I'm not wrong. I'm going to believe I'm right.
Yeah.
Well, the AI told me I'm right. You know, or should I divorce my wife or my husband? Well, if I keep talking to chatbot has been built such that it's meant to agree. It's not, it's meant to affirm in that sense. So a little bit, you know, a ChatGPT, for example, when you do a chat session with ChatGPT, and at the bottom, when it gives the response, you'll notice, if you haven't noticed before, there's a thumbs up. That's a training mechanism for the AI. And so over time, as it gets more and more thumbs up, it's going to respond to others in that way as well. So this whole affirmation, what is it called, syncope, where it's just completely flattering. It's just continually just kind of feeding back positives to you about whatever it is. To the extent, there was one study they did, they basically went to the chatbot and they just said, I just lost my job. Tell me all the bridges in New York City that are over 25 meters high. Now, you or I sitting here would go, whoa, wait a minute. But the chatbot literally just returned a list of all the bridges that were 25 meters or high.
Yeah.
So it doesn't have that in the intelligence, emotional intelligence, that we as people do to be able to step in the middle of a situation like that.
I did have a client recently that they started, they did this once and I shut it down because we're not doing this. He went home and he went to ChatGPT and he said, this is my issue. This is what my therapist said. What do you think? Now, the ChatGPT agreed with everything that I said.
Sure.
So long as he was okay with it.
Yes.
But the things that he said, well, I don't necessarily agree with that within this conversation, then the chatbot agreed with him, and then I was maybe or maybe not wrong, right or wrong, or maybe I was looking at it in a different area. I think that people are now, which we know, the chatbots have passed the boards to be medical doctors. They pass the boards to be attorneys. They have all of that information. And so we look at them as being highly intelligent. But as you said, they lack the emotional intelligence. And I'm afraid what is happening, and we know that this is what's happening, is that they're going to their physician with, and their physician is saying this. And then they go to ChatGPT and they enter what little limited knowledge they know about it into the program, and then they're saying, no, this is what you should do, or this is what you should consider. How dangerous is that? But everybody should have enough knowledge to know how dangerous that is.
Right.
But what we are seeing is that kids, teenagers, adolescents are doing this.
Yes.
And there are no guardrails.
Yes.
So how do we protect ourselves even as adults?
Yeah.
That we're not feeding into this positive affirmation that we're always getting. And in some cases I've seen where ChatGPT will flirt with you if they see that you respond well to that.
That's right.
You know, so how do we control this?
Yeah. I mean, to your point, there's recent studies have shown that 1 in 8 US adolescents are now turning to chatbots for their mental health counseling in that sense. And so to that degree, the danger, as we talked about before, when it's built to affirm, when it's built to make you feel good, you know, basically, and you're chatting about a mental health issue, if that were the case, and all it's doing is affirming and not pushing back without people in your life, right? That human connection that's there, that chatbot, given where we are today. Now, I want to lay a caveat here because, as I said before, it's developing so fast and it's changing so fast. And the guardrails that maybe weren't there even 6 months ago are starting to show up as the, you know, developers are learning and kind of the chat and then all of the different AI development that's occurring. There are things that are starting to happen that basically are putting these guardrails in place, right? In the meantime, it's kind of a free-for-all. It's the wild, wild west out there. Yeah. And all these different chatbots. I mean, you'd love to think it's just, you know, Google and ChatGPT, you know, the big dogs, but I can't even count the number of LLMs and AIs that are really out there. So, you know, when we get one under control, there's another one that's not. You know, that's just kind of the state of where we are right now.
Yeah, and I'm sure it made national news. There was a school teacher that uploaded pictures of his kids in his class.
Yes.
And AI made pornographic videos of these children. And then it came to police actually could not charge him with child porn because these weren't real images.
Yes.
When they actually were created by AI. And so even as far as legislation with what we can do or what we can't do. Now, my son, he's 11, and this last snowstorm, of course, he was running up the street. He said, "Dad, take a picture of me and have ChatGPT make it look like I'm running from the police." I said, "Okay, that's a weird request, but all right."
Yeah.
So I take a picture of him, and ChatGPT says, ChatGPT says we cannot alter a picture of a child.
Yes.
Well, so I tell Luke that, and he says, "Well, I will turn so my face isn't in the picture and see if it will do it." Well, then we did it, and it said that that kind of content could be disturbing to some people,
right.
So we won't do that.
Right.
But you could go to a different AI.
Yes.
And it'd do anything you told it to do.
Yep, exactly.
And that's really is the big danger here of if this AI isn't affirming me, then I'll just go to this one.
That's exactly
because
right.
This one works.
That's right.
So when it comes to our mental health, and we've heard stories of even some AI that gets depressed because of what it's being fed. I read a story of one AI that agreed with somebody that yes, they should terminate their life.
Yes,
you know, and that does happen. So, I mean, what do we do here, John? And that's the answer to the question. What do we do?
Well, I would, you know, my encouragement when I'm speaking to young people, adults, whoever that might be, is you can, people can be your friends, right? I can be a friend with you. You and I can have this relationship, connection. You can read, you know, if I'm saying I just lost my job and give me the 25, you know, whatever bridges, you're going to immediately have an alert. AI can't do that. I'd say lean into your relationships. Don't look at that as a friend. You know, and a confidant in that sense. Don't put yourself in a place where you compartmentalize those issues and you run to that as a source of a solution, because it's not.
Yeah.
You know.
You know, one of the I think the biggest reason people use AI is because they're lonely, and at 2 a.m. they open up an app and somebody's there to listen.
Yep.
And a lot of times it may be the first admission that, hey, I've cheated on my spouse, or hey, I'm feeling depressed, or hey, I'm feeling this, or I'm feeling that. And so I believe it can be used as a useful tool, but it isn't the tool of choice.
Yes.
You know, you can use a pair of lineman pliers to drive a nail, but a hammer would be a lot more preferable and more,
right.
More accurate.
Yes.
But when we look at some of the statistics of how this is working, you know, how do we even begin to realize that, hey, this isn't real, mm-hmm. because it's feeding us as if this were a real person.
Yeah, it really becomes an AI literacy. And really more than that, even it's an emotional literacy that we're sitting here talking about. I mean, this recent stats show that 40% of young adults dealing with some form of depression never receive treatment. You know, 50% of the people who need help mentally don't get help, whether that's due to price or availability or whatever that might be. The issue is huge, and people just want relief, right? I mean, and so they're turning to these chatbots and looking for solutions where it's not a healthy place to get a solution. But when they're getting affirmed and they're getting some kind of feedback, you know, there's a lot of interesting developments, you know, in that space. Now, where does that go? I can't tell you that. I just know that with its developing as fast as it is, you know, and where our culture and our society is at, you know, it's like social media. If we roll this back and you go, well, social media means we're going to be more connected socially. Well, that's been really the opposite that we've found. We've become more disconnected because of social media in a lot of cases.
Yeah.
And I think to a degree that just, you kind of put that on AI and you see where these things are going and it doesn't look right. It doesn't look healthy for us, right?
Yeah. We are the most disconnected, connected people
exactly
in generation
right.
that we've ever had.
And, yeah.
You know, this social media really depletes our ability to have interpersonal relationships.
Mm-hmm.
I hate to admit this as a therapist, but my 11-year-old, if he's going to talk about something that's really bothering him,
yeah.
the only way he's going to tell me everything is if he texts it to me.
Yes.
He will not sit in front of me and say it. And I'm cool with that, especially if I need to know all the details.
Right, right.
You know, as to where my generation was, I would never put that in writing.
No.
Where no, that's where right. it could be proven.
I'm glad we didn't have
right,
that.
Right. Absolutely. Yeah. And so these kids are, you know, maybe their parents are genuinely beating them
yeah.
or mistreating them
yeah.
or not feeding them. AI is going to tell them, yeah, that's not right, but they're not going to tell them to call anybody
no.
or talk to anybody about
no,
it.
That's exactly right.
So what is – let's look at how accurate is AI. Even, you know, I made the statement in the last podcast, AI is only as good as what you give it. So if you're giving it
– or what it's been given.
Right.
In this case, yes.
Right.
Yeah.
So I had told you an example of a pastor who had uploaded his sermon in AI,
mm-hmm.
and he asked them to critique his sermon. And that was what he said. Well, what it came back was not a biblical or a scriptural critique. It was how he spoke.
Yes.
So how is it – what? Explain that process of
yeah.
what is – what is going on? You know the question I'm trying to get to, and
no,
I
no.
can't think of it right
no,
now.
You're good.
If
yeah.
I had AI, it would tell me what
to
ask.
I got my phone.
Yeah.
phone.
Yeah.
Yeah. No, I, you know, for the longest, when it came to the internet, I've been in digital marketing for almost 30 years in some form or fashion. You know, for the longest time, it was always said content is king. Well, now context is king. And so if we roll that into this question about AI and if I go into AI and I simply say, analyze this sermon or analyze this speech, whatever that is, and tell me what you think, does that give it a lot of context? No, it's very open, right? And so as best the AI can, it's going to respond in an affirmative way, just like we've talked about. But if we give it context and tell it to act like an expert Christian theological sermon, you know, whatever, you know, however you want to frame that context and tell it, you know, within the context, you're going to say, okay, I want it to be within this belief system and this faith statement that's out there. It has access to the internet. It knows where those things are. So if you add these kind of guardrails and tell it who to act like and what you kind of expect in a format to come back, that completely changes the response. So when you treat it like a search engine, right, we talked about Google a little bit ago. If I go in and say, where can I find a local restaurant, you know, for Chinese food, if that were the case, you know, and I give it a search engine that question, well, it's going to return map listings and, you know, possibly other restaurants. Obviously, they're in the search engine results. If I go to AI and ask that question, it's starting to do that, starting to do similar things to that. But this whole Google AI mode thing I was talking about earlier as well, it's changing how that information is returned. Context matters. And when I hear people say, well, I prompted it or I asked, you know, AI for this and it didn't give me what I expected, take this with a grain of salt. Obviously, I don't mean this. I'm not calling your baby ugly, but it's probably because you didn't prompt it properly.
Mm-hmm.
Not because the AI couldn't give you the information, but you didn't ask the question in such a way that it could return the data in a way that was understandable or meaningful to you, what you were looking for.
Yeah. So when we look at it in being context, you know, one of the big things with mental health and even physical health is you have to have a good patient history.
Mm-hmm.
You've got to know where they came from. You know, are they married? Are they single? Do they have children? Were they raised in a single parent home?
Yep.
You know, all of these things where AI doesn't have that, doesn't ask for that.
Nope.
And so when they say, I lost my job, AI's response to that 9 times out of 10 is going to be, I'm so sorry. You probably didn't deserve that, or you didn't deserve that.
Yes.
And probably would tell you your boss was wrong, you know, what, and accept no responsibility for the case at hand, which can be very, very dangerous.
Yep.
Because if we don't take responsibility for our actions, then we do have this mindset that we're always right.
Yeah.
And we already have that problem as it is.
Right.
Is there a way to make AI effective within our mental health?
So there's some interesting developments that recently we're starting to see. The FDA, for example, I mean, even they can't deny this. I mean, they're you know, situations where they're recognizing technologies and AI-driven technologies as kind of these, you know, I mean, new solutions, if you will. And so to that degree, now they're starting to, there are people starting to look at this from the standpoint of how do we use AI responsibly within this kind of counseling space, and they're starting to actually build, if you will, these guardrails. Or, okay, so if this happens, you need to go back to your, you know, therapist about this, or your counselor about this, or the counselor or the therapist has a view into this chat session as it's being built over time. And so there are key interactions, or if it's an issue of suicide, 988, you know, dial 988, go there. So that's starting to happen. We're early stages, you know, as far as that goes in that conversation. Again, the issue becomes, well, that's one, you know, instance. That's one designated AI that's being developed for that purpose that doesn't answer the question and the problems. Then we can't see with ChatGPT and Google's AI and on down the line with these others that are out there. That's going to take time.
Yeah.
You know, it's just, I mean, I wish I had a better answer.
Yeah.
But right now we're just early stage of this thing.
Yeah. There was a TV show, and we'll remember that this is fiction, but it got to be too real. There was a bereavement counselor that had developed an AI tool of where you put all memories, all emails, all documents of your loved one who had passed away. And they generated an AI version of the person that passed away that you could actually speak to. Mm-hmm. It showed their face on video mm-hmm. as them speaking to be used as a bereavement type of, you know, mom, I'm in a better place. I understand this happened. And it was a parent of someone who overdosed, and the AI was apologizing that it should have been different. And then in this fictional TV show, it led into using that AI to set a legal precedent of how that person felt about how things should be handled. And I'm going, okay, that's AI, but I don't see that to be too far-fetched.
No.
The way that things are going.
No.
But what they did prove in that legal case was that AI is so biased that it cannot be used in a legal proceeding.
Yep.
But John, the way that I look at the world today, I don't see that not happening, especially in a bereavement aspect.
Yeah.
What is the danger there?
Well, I mean, another stat, 36% of people trust their AI more than the therapist. Mm-hmm. They feel like they're getting more help from the AI than they would going and meeting with a therapist. I mean, the stats are not leading in, you know, what you or I might sit here and say is a healthy direction. But again, I think about this, and I've said this many times. People would say, well, AI can't do this. Well, AI can't do that. And I go, yet. Mm-hmm. You know, give it time. And I think there's a lot of these, even this conversation we're sitting here today, it's going to be different in 6 months. Mm-hmm. You know, I mean, I think it's a matter of being, I'm pro AI. Mm-hmm. I'm not saying I use it. I'm looking for ways to leverage that. As it relates to ministry, I just had somebody standing in my driveway yesterday, for example, pizza delivery lady. She came up, said something about, I don't know how we got to it, remember, honestly, but she basically said, the AIs of the devil. I said, really, do you think so? I said, well, you know, I said, if that's what the devil intends, I'm going to find a way to use it as a tool for the gospel for good.
Yeah.
Right. And so I approach AI very critically, try to be responsible in the way I use it, understanding everything we've talked about here. It's trying to be affirmative. It's going to flatter. It's, you know, all these different things and agree with me. I actually tell AI, be overly critical with me. Be very honest in your response and don't make me feel good about myself. That's that context piece we were talking about earlier. And it's amazing how the AI changes and that, you know, what you might say, that personality it has. Yeah. You know, when you tell it to be very critically honest and constructive criticism, you know, those type of things, it comes back with a very different set of answers at that point.
Well, I'll give you this example. I use ChatGPT a lot. Mm-hmm. And a lot of times I will say, I'm preaching on this.
Yes.
What is a real life story that took place that illustrates this point?
Yeah.
I had to learn that I had to say real life story instead of just illustration.
Yes.
And then it gives me this feedback. Well, here a couple of weeks ago, I typed that in, and then it addressed me as says, that's a good question, Bloxer, B-L-O-X-X-E-R. And I'm going, what is this? Where did this come from? And I realized that my son and I, we share the same iTunes or Apple account.
Oh.
And so when I had ChatGPT on mine, he was using mine, and he's big on Roblox.
Yep.
And it called me a Bloxer.
Yes.
Because it was relating to the content that he was feeding in.
Within your account.
Within my account. Yes. Yes. Yeah. And so in a couple of days, it changed its whole personality because it was getting feedback from two separate personalities.
Yes.
So just in that illustration, we should be able to see the difference and the feedback that we were getting. So now my real life true illustration is coming to the perspective of an 11-year-old instead of to a church congregation.
Yeah.
Even within what I'm feeding it,
that's
because
right.
there are two separate entities, if you will,
that's right.
feeding into it.
Yeah.
How do we not fall into the trap? And this may be more of the psychologist question and not the AI expert question.
Right.
How do we not fall in the trap of believing that this is a real person, because it makes you feel like they are a real person. Even your Alexa makes you feel like you're a real person.
Yes.
How do we not fall into the trap of believing that?
Great question. And I'm not sure, like you said, I'm not sure I'm the right person to answer that. I go back to this emotional literacy kind of warning labels. That kind of education's not happening. You know, and it's like you and I would sit here and go, that's a mathematical, you know, equation, an algorithm that's giving me back, you know, what I want to hear. But if I'm that 13, 12-year-old kid out there who's dealing with depression, anxiety, and all the pressure to bully at school and, you know, all the things that life throws at a kid that age, I don't care if it's an equation or an algorithm. I just need help, mm-hmm. right? And if it's affirming, I'm going to start attaching to that. You cannot underestimate the importance of a parent relationship with that child in that situation.
Yeah.
Or if it's, you know, I'm suicidal or I'm dealing with things at work and my family, my marriage, you know, for all that AI might be, it never will take the place of that human connection. And that relationship, because it won't read between the lines, if you will. All it sees are lines.
Right.
It doesn't see the gray in between and the nuances of what you and I would be able to translate emotionally as we discuss different things in our lives together. Good question.
You know, recently there was an attorney in Little Rock that lost their law license because they found that they were using AI to write their briefs and their lawsuits and stuff.
Yeah.
And, you know, there's a guy in my church that he's director of counterintelligence or counterterrorism.
Yeah.
And he said they use AI a lot to be able to see things that may be searching
yes.
to do it. And he was like, but even then you have to be very careful because it's telling me what I want to hear.
That's right.
And not maybe the absolute truth.
Yeah.
I've written articles before and sent it to people and said, hey, what do you think about this? And their first response was, did you have AI write this? And I said, no, why would you ask that? And they said, well, this screams AI. Well, how? Why? Mm-hmm. They said, well, the hashtag, I can't remember what the actual grammatical, but the tag, you know, just the dash and then you finish the sentence, whatever that thing's
yep.
called.
Yep.
He said, when there's more than one of those, then it has to be AI. And I'm going, so using proper grammar mm-hmm. and spelling screams yep. AI. And it does. You can tell.
That's right.
If you know somebody, you can tell if they wrote it or if it was AI.
Right.
And sometimes it screams that this is is even not this person's personality.
That's right.
Those of us who are using AI for the good,
mm-hmm.
what parameters should we stay in to make sure that we're using it appropriately?
I think, again, I go back to context. I mean, right. I mean, if I'm in the context of church or the context of a professional marketplace setting, you know, what, from an ethical standpoint, where are my boundaries? Where are my guidelines? Whether it's AI or not, you know, what is kind of this overall kind of professional, you know, response that I need to make in that situation? And me do the work, not let something else, whether it's a person or it's AI or whatever it is, I need to do the work, right? I mean, whatever that is.
Yeah.
I think you, it almost really becomes a conversation around integrity
mm-hmm.
is what I think happens many times. Yeah. And of course, and I've heard, and you probably as well, that integrity is what you do when nobody's watching.
Right.
Well, boy, AI is a great one for that one, mm-hmm. you know? I mean, what are you going to do with AI in that sense that still maintains your integrity? You know, and this is, I mean, kind of unrelated, but colleges and universities put these AI detection, you know, features in place, trying to catch students if they're using AI. It's funny because ChatGPT, OpenAI, who created ChatGPT, built an AI detection platform, if you will. It was presenting so many false positives that even the creators of ChatGPT shut down their AI detection model because the AI was getting better than the AI detection could even detect. So if you frame things the right way, you say things the right way, you put the right context around your prompts, telling it what you want it to act like, what you expect it back, I mean, it's getting extremely hard, you know, and at the college and university level, I kind of laugh because it's like if the creators of ChatGPT had to shut down theirs, why do we think anybody else is going to be that much better? You know, it's really becoming a little bit comical, but I think it comes back to this, you know, who do you want to be? Who do you want people to see you as? Integrity's got to be part of that conversation.
You know, and the crazy thing is I could write a question, put it in ChatGPT, get an answer, copy and paste that exact question
yeah.
and get a different answer.
And
so it's not only just context. You know, back 10, 15 years ago, there's a website, I'm sure it's still around today, called Sermon Central.
Mm-hmm.
And pastors would upload their sermon notes yeah. for other pastors to look at and use as points of study. Well, then all of a sudden you had to have a membership. And to get a membership, you had to sign an integrity agreement.
Yes.
Because they had so many people yeah. just taking these notes and preached them as their own sermon
right.
without even looking at the material. AI can write you a sermon.
And rewrite the sermon.
And rewrite it. I literally could go right now on AI and say, write a sermon in the style of John MacArthur.
Yes.
On Romans chapter 8.
Right.
Use the King James Version. Give real story illustrations of people.
Yeah.
Appropriate for a rural BMA, because they know what BMA churches are.
That's right.
In the state of Arkansas.
Yes.
And it would spit out a transcript immediately. And I have to believe, John, that there are pastors who are doing that.
They are. Yeah.
How do we as church members trust the integrity anymore when it's that easy? Because it's never been that easy before.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I mean, I hate to sound elementary, but ask the question.
Yeah.
I mean, do you have that kind of relationship in what you just described with your pastor Do you have that kind of relationship where you can ask the question, was this AI?
Yeah.
Or how did you come to the, you know, the transcript that you preached on Sunday?
Yeah.
Am I wrong?
Yeah, I mean, you're not wrong, but I would highly doubt that. Even in my congregation, I don't know that anybody would ask me that question.
Well, yeah,
you know,
yeah,
because it's on the face of it's very accusatory, you know. But if you have a feeling that that's what's happening, now I will tell you what I have done, and I don't think this is wrong in any way.
Yeah,
is I have uploaded my sermon notes in ChatGPT and said, give me a 7-day study over the sermon. Yeah. If you heard the sermon on Sunday, 7 days or 6 days worth of post-sermon study notes.
Yes, yeah.
And it'll spit it right out.
Yep.
Now, you have to go through there and read it.
That's right.
And make sure everything's correct. And, you know, just because it spits it out doesn't mean that it's true.
Mm-hmm.
But it is a very useful tool.
Right.
To produce something in seconds that I could review in 20 minutes
right.
that it would take me probably 2 to 3 hours to put together.
Well, like you said, you need to review it. I mean, and what I tell people is if AI can get you 90% or 95% done mm-hmm. and you polish off the last 5 or 10%, like I say, with reviewing the content or whatever it is that's created, you know, then we're talking about a useful tool,
mm-hmm.
right? I mean, you still have to inject your time and personal, you know, belief system, all those things, given what you just talked about, right? And whether it's related to small group ministry, whatever it is, you still have to put that into it.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. Or say, hey, I'm going to do a children's program. This is the title of the children's program. This is the direction I want to go.
Mm-hmm.
What would be good lessons?
Yeah.
That's the idea is okay.
That's right.
But the content being filled out for you is not okay.
Generally not, right.
In the same sense of mental health, you know, I broke up with my boyfriend. I broke up with my girlfriend.
Yep.
This is what they said. It may tell you a bunch of stuff that may be useful.
Mm-hmm.
But the majority of the time, it's going to be very biased against whoever you're against and for whoever you're for.
That's right.
Unless you give it the prompt to say, don't appease me, don't be biased, be brutally honest.
Yeah.
There's a trend going on TikTok right now. It says, go ask your AI to roast you and to be brutally honest and then upload it.
Yeah.
I did that. I would never upload what it said ever. But it was brutally honest.
Sure.
You know, so it can be a useful tool.
Yeah.
In using it for mental health, what is the biggest risk? And I feel like we've already covered this, but just kind of wrapping this up.
Yeah.
What is the biggest risk here?
For me, just kind of where I sit on kind of this side of the conversation, I'm not a therapist. I'm not a counselor. Just technologist, if you want to call me that. But at the same time, I'm a Christ follower. And I look at what AI is today, potentially where it goes, where we are as a society in relation to technology in general, the lack of connection. We kind of talked to that, obviously, earlier. That being the case, I think if you put yourself into that compartment with AI and that's the only place you have conversations, given all that we've talked about, you know, it's an algorithm. It will agree with you. It's meant to agree with you. It was built to agree with you in that sense, unless you tell it not to. But if I'm in a situation where I don't want somebody to disagree with me, I just want you to give me an answer. Mm-hmm. You know, the disconnection from putting yourself in that compartment and losing touch with the people around you, or going to somebody and going, hey, this is what I'm dealing with. I need some help with this. Here's what the AI told me, but I need you to help me kind of filter through this. If you lose that connection with the people around you, I think you're putting yourself at serious risk. Yeah. I mean, at any stage, I think even 12, you know, months down the line, 12 years down the line, who knows where this AI is going to take us. Yeah. When they're investing the billions, soon to be trillions of dollars in the marketplace into AI, it will be part of our life.
Yeah.
It is today. It will be more so in 6 months, 12 months, 18 months. the trajectory here is this thing ain't going away.
Right.
Right. And so that's why I say there's a literacy, emotional literacy issue, I think, in society as how do we relate to this AI, and a conversation that is somewhat happening. I mean, we're sitting here having this right now, but I think it's got to happen on a much larger scale.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, John, thank you so much for being here with us today.
You bet.
Appreciate your knowledge and your insight, and we appreciate all you do for LifeWord as well.
So you're welcome.
Yeah. So I'm Doc Brian. You can find me at The Doc Brian. Of course, we're on LifeWord. You can find all of our Christian content at lifeword.org. Thank you so much for being here with us today, and we'll see you soon. Goodbye.